Welcome to the College Football Bros, the podcast that will never tank a season. And now, here are your hosts, Michael, Ryan, and Trey Newman.
Welcome to the College Football Bros podcast. I'm Michael Newman, and I'm joined by the brother in Marina Del Rey.
That would be me, Ryan Newman.
And by the other brother in San Diego.
That's me, Trey Newman.
All right. Well, if you saw the title of the episode, we are not previewing the ACC as promised. And the reason for that is just the last couple of weeks, there's so much uncertainty with whether there will be a season in the fall or what it will look like. So we're going to give it at least a few weeks and just see if there's more clarity before we start doing
previews. Yeah, we want to make sure when we do the preview episodes, it's right before the season starts for sure. So,
yeah, exactly. So plan it by ear. But this episode, we're going to go through some of the X factors for that season. And before we get to that, though, Trey, we've got some five-star reviews.
Yeah, we got one from Hayden Halling. He says, it's titled Best College Football Podcast. Coming from Spotify, this podcast overall is amazing. Gives an incredible podcast that is informative and funny. No other college football podcasts compare. Go Utes.
It's so true. Every other podcast sucks, but ours.
Yeah, they might.
I didn't even know there were other podcasts.
There might not be, but if they do, they suck.
All right. We had one other one here. It's from, Gunner? Maybe Goner? I know it's kind of a funky one. Anyways, he says, one of the best. Insightful and entertaining college football fans provide a great show on a regular schedule. We do keep our schedule.
We haven't missed a week in quite a long time. I don't know. It's been a couple years or something. It's been a long time.
Did we miss a week once? Maybe an off season we did it like...
We used to not in the off season do every week, but now we do.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're dedicated. Okay. Let's get into the X factors then. So we have 10 X factors for this season. Not a top 10 necessarily, not in any particular order, but just a list of 10 here. So... Trey, what's our first X factor?
The first X factor is LSU's offense. I'm really anxious to see how this offense unfolds this year. I mean, most likely at quarterback, you're going to have junior Miles Brennan take over for Joe Burrow. I mean, we all know there is almost literally no possible way that he'll match Burrow's production. But honestly, I'm a little skeptical on the offense in general. Steve Ensminger, he's still there calling plays, but Joe Brady's system was clearly the difference that kind of elevated LSU's offense to get them over the top. So can he maintain Brady's system now that Brady left for the Carolina Panthers? You know, Burrow, the other reason he was successful too is because last year it was his second year. That's not going to be the case here with Brennan. This will be his first year of, being the starter.
Being the guy.
And, you know, they lost seven guys on offense to the NFL. A lot of replacements on the offensive line, which won't help. I know they've recruited well, but, I guess the positive is that they still have one of the best receivers in football. You got Ja'Marr Chase. They've also got the former five-star Terrace Marshall. He's a junior now. But overall, I'm anticipating a pretty sharp decline from last year.
This X factor could almost just be the Joe Brady factor. Seemed to be the main reason as to why they took such a huge jump. Of course, it's not the only one. They had such good talent around it, but 60 touchdown passes though last year. That's just nuts. I mean,
it is.
You know, that's nuts. But you got so many big guys to replace. Clyde Edwards-Helaire. How are you going to replace him on the ground? I mean, he was awesome last year. Justin Jefferson, he's kind of maybe the even underappreciated guy compared to Ja'Marr Chase. Jefferson may have been the best receiver they had. He was awesome. So they do bring in a new great tight end, Eric Gilbert.
Yeah.
He's going to be a stud. So he'll probably fill in right in for Thaddeus Moss and won't miss a beat, maybe even be better. He might have a little more upside than Moss. So there's obviously going to get worse. It's just impossible not to. But I don't think they're going to go to like 2018 mode where they're that bad. So I think it's going to be maybe a little bit more of a happy medium. But anybody expecting Miles Brennan to be in the Heisman combo needs to check themselves probably.
Yeah, well, SP Plus projects LSU to have the fifth best offense in 2020. Yeah, what do you guys think? I see Trey shaking.
That's a little too high, man.
I don't buy it. There's too much maybe recency bias in that one.
Yeah, I think this is probably a difficult situation for a one-size-fits-all projection system just because it was such an outlier season by LSU last year. Even if you do forecast a huge regression, it still grades out as one of the best offenses in college football. So they're 128th in returning production. There's only 130 teams.
What's that? As a total team or just the offense?
No, just the offense.
Okay.
So, yeah, they obviously lose a lot. And until they prove that they're like Oklahoma, if they lost all this talent, I wouldn't really worry too much. I'd just be like, well, Lincoln Riley's going to put out another. Yeah,
they lost a ton of offensive linemen before last year, and then their offensive line was still really good this past year. And
OU, you're talking about.
Yeah, OU. And then a great quarterback, a new QB. It's like, okay, but now they're still.
It doesn't matter. And I think Ohio State with Ryan Day is becoming that as well, where it doesn't seem like it's going to matter who they have. They're going to be a great offense. LSU, I need to see it before I believe it. I think they'll be good this year, but I'm not sure great.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Okay, our number two X factor here is Oregon quarterback Tyler Shuck.
Show.
And what's that?
Show.
No.
It's haven't it we gone be. Through this?
It should be.
It's
not. That's not Shuck.
It's spelled Show, but anyway, pronounced Shuck, I believe. And he's a sophomore, and he's not guaranteed to be the starter. They do have the Boston College transfer Anthony Brown, but Shuck is the big favorite. So the reason he's an X factor is we know Oregon's defense is going to be great. There's no doubt about that. And on offense, there are some promising pieces around him. So first of all, he's got Joe Moorhead as offensive coordinator coming in from Mississippi State. He's a great coordinator. The offensive line doesn't have a ton of experience, but you got Penei Sewell at left tackle, one of the best players in college football. And just the way Cristobal has recruited and developed that position, I think they'll be fine on the O-line. And then skill talent-wise, you got CJ Verdell and Travis Dye, arguably the best running back duo in the Pac-12. At receiver, that's been a question mark in recent years, but I think it's getting better. They've got a couple.
I think this is the year where I'm sorry to interrupt, Mike.
Go for it.
No, I think this is the year where the receivers kind of catch up and they actually have proven guys where they have those trio of sophomores that are going to just, I think they're all four stars that they're going to take another leap. So I think they'll be a good group.
I agree. You got the sophomores you're talking about, I think are Devin Williams coming from USC. He was actually a five star. You got Micah Pittman, who was kind of hurt last year, but when he played really well. And then I think Brian Addison is another one. There's tons of guys. I think they'll be good there. So it all comes down to quarterback. And if it works, if Tyler Shuck is legit, then they're a playoff contender. If he is not and underwhelms, then they're not, so kind of that simple. And they might even be in a fight to just win the North. I'm going to skew optimistic on this as far as how I think it will work out. Tyler Shuck was a highly recruited guy. He's been there a few years. I don't think Justin Herbert, production-wise, set the bar crazy high to where he can't meet it or possibly even exceed it. So, I'm high on Shuck.
Yeah, I mean, talking to some Oregon fans and reading some online, articles from, with an Oregon bias, a lot of them talk about how the offense there could have been even better with Herbert last season in particular. Like, people felt that Herbert might have been held back by the offensive coordinator Arroyo. Michael, I didn't think you brought up your boy Joe Moorhead. Now
I did, but thanks for listening.
See, I do now. Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, exactly. But I think his addition, though, is going to elevate this offense even more, like take them to another level because of what you talked about, though, as far as the depth and talent surrounding them. There's an actual team. They're not going to solely rely on the quarterback. I think it's not all going to fall on Shuck's shoulders.
And one thing you didn't bring up is who he's replacing, Marcus Arroyo at offensive coordinator.
That's a great point. A great point.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. No, but I mean, he's got the size, 6'5". He was the number 7 overall, or the pro style recruit a couple years ago. So he's well regarded. There's no reason that he can't at least match what Herbert's production was last year, in my opinion, based on the talent around him. So I'm encouraged, and I like Shuck this year.
He doesn't quite have the physical capabilities of Herbert, at least arm talent wise. He's not, it's kind of been well known that he's a little more of the, maybe, I don't know. He doesn't quite have that ability, but I'm kind of with you on the fact that I think he's going to be pretty good. And he's got a lot of supporting cast around him. He doesn't need to be great, because, you know, with the set of situation they got there. So Michael, you know, he doesn't have to be, like, even match necessarily Herbert's to be a playoff contender. I mean, their defense alone is going to make them a playoff contender, just because of the Pac-12. I mean, they can win the Pac-12. They can win every game without Shuck being great. So it would help. I mean, it helped them be a national title contender. But playoff contender, they're that already. There's no doubt. So, but it, we'll see if the Shuck can be good enough to make them a national title contender.
Mm-hmm. And the floor, like we say, is Anthony Brown from Boston College, who is not bad.
Right.
Yeah. No, he's not.
But it's Shuck the Duck.
Brown might get a few packages in, just anyways.
I agree, because exactly, if they want to add in some mobility,
some RPO, a little action, so maybe he might get a little time in there. But all right, let's move on to my first X factor here. OU's defense. Yes, OU's defense. If you look at it last year, you know, it was no doubt better than it had been. You know, you kind of, obviously the LSU game leaves a sour taste in your mouth, because it was just like a JV team playing out there, but that was LSU yeah. offense wasn't fair. So
that game was an aberration.
Yeah. You can't. I don't put too much stock into that, other than how amazing LSU's offense was. That's the way I really look at it. So, you know, Alex Grinch, the defensive coordinator that came from Ohio State the year before, I give him a lot of credit for that defense turning around, last year. You know, it was good at better, but it's obviously not a national title type of contending defense. But I'll say, though, the days of having to have an elite defense to win a national title, it seems kind of like it's over. You know, I mean, LSU last year, they were 32nd in the nation in scoring defense, and they won it. And if you go back to 2010 with Auburn, they won it when they were 53rd in the scoring defense in the country. So their defense really wasn't very good at all. So, you know, yet Cam Newton and amazing offensive LSU, but that's my point.
LSU's defense got better as the season went on.
Yeah, it's true. It did get better.
Scoring defense, you know, a lot of garbage touchdowns, but still, the point being, it wasn't elite for most of the year. That's for sure.
And it just feels like, you know, if the offenses are kind of more dictating that, like the way it was.
Yes.
It's ever since 2000, it's pretty much since Cam's types of year, these past 10, 15 years, it's just the offense has gotten more and more important. But I don't know. So OU last year, they were 64th in that category, scoring defense. So they weren't like that far off. But if you can get them to make, you know, a little bit of a jump from that year, and they have 9 returning starters coming back on that defense. So I think they are going to make a jump. And they were actually the number one rushing defense in the Big 12. So if that secondary just could get shored up a little bit, you know, I think they could actually be a legit national title contender this year.
I agree. To put numbers or some advanced stats to OU's jump defensively last year. So in 2018, according to Massey Peabody, OU had the 73rd defense in the country, 73rd best. Last year, they were 23rd. So when you adjust for their competition and the pace they play, it was a pretty decent defense. Now, granted, I think that number is before the LSU game, because Massey Peabody.
They're like 100th now.
Yeah, they're 100th, but still, they were pretty decent for most of the year. And agreed, I think they're going to be better this year with all they have coming back, year two of the system. So, if the offense is as good as it has been, if it's a top two or three offense, then yeah, I agree. I think they're a legit national championship contender.
Yep, I agree with you guys' points. Michael, you just mentioned going into the second year of the system, that should help, because they've got all that returning experience. So they're all familiar with it. They're also bringing back Caleb Kelly, the linebacker from injury. He missed most of last year, which will help because they lose Kenneth Murray at linebacker.
Yeah, that's a big loss.
Drafted. That was a big loss, but having a guy come back from injury that that is capable will certainly help. And they also they've it's not like they haven't recruited well, so they need some of that young talent that they've recruited to kind of step up. And they got a big JUCO transfer on the D line, Perrion Winfrey. Yeah. There's Jalen Redmond and Jordan Kelly on the line that are sophomores that are, or they're underclassmen that are young that can, could elevate that D line. Cause they need, if they could generate a pass rush, that would really help, because one of the things that they did lack last year, even though they had improvement, they were 121st in takeaways. So if they could get a little bit of a pass rush and force some turnovers, that'll obviously kind of elevate them to get them to where they need to be. One thing I did note,
started with job one, which was stopping the run, and they got a lot better at that.
Yeah, you can't address it all at once. The one thing I didn't even realize that both their corners in the secondary are named Trey, so naturally they're just going to do really well. That's just going to be a strength.
I want to say Trey Norwood, like, he was injured last year. I don't know if he was injured for the whole year, but I seem to recall him being.
He was. You got Trey Brown and Trey Norwood. So the Trays on the corners will do just fine.
They've always recruited well. It's just they didn't develop them very well on that side of the ball. Was the one
right?
Was
but I mean, the way I am encouraged by the way Grinch elevated the play last year, and then if they don't make a stride this year, then it's cause for big concern. But I think they will.
Yeah. No. It's the Grinch, man. It's the Grinch guy. You did a good job.
They at least they'll look more competent.
All right. What's next?
All right. Moving on. This one is pretty interesting. We're going to talk about Houston, the Cougars, their redshirt strategy. So, you know, if you don't remember, Houston had some high expectations last season with Dana Holgorsen coming in, Derek King. Then they started 1-3 and they devised the redshirt plan. Since the rules give players the ability that haven't used the red shirt to do so. So they ended up saving some of their best players and pushing them into the 2020 season. The only problem was that Derek King was one of them, their quarterback. He ended up deciding to transfer away. But they still have a great receiver in Keith Corbin, running back Mo Bakar, amongst others that actually redshirted. So and Clayton Tune, the quarterback that's coming back, he's not a slouch, like, and especially with year two under Holgorsen. I'm not saying he's Derek King at all, but
yeah,
he you know, year two Dana Holgorsen with some of those weapons, it'll be interesting. I'm really curious to see how it pans out. And you know, it's like if the Houston offense lights it up with those guys that redshirted, it could set a precedent for teams in the future to maybe do the same. So I kind of more wanted to talk about this strategy and if you guys thought it might continue in college football. So kind of hear what you guys have to say.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen a whole team do the strategy as aggressively as Holgorsen did. There's been individual players and actually a couple at Miami. So you look at Zach McLeod, their linebacker, last year redshirted his senior year, I believe. And just because he wasn't quite getting as much playing time as he had his career there and just wanted to, you know, come back for and have a great 2020. And then this year, Navon Donaldson, one of their offensive linemen, coming off an injury. So that's part of the reason for it. But it kind of feels like just a similar situation to Zach McLeod that he's doing. So it's interesting. I think it's going to work out for Houston. They're going to be a lot better this year. I think they're top five in returning production coming back just because of, they're not losing many seniors because they redshirted quite a few of them. But another reason they're going to be better is just because they had so many injuries last year and they had transfers. That's another part of what Holgorsen did. He brought in a lot of Power Five transfers that had to sit out last year. So that's going to help make the redshirting seniors look even better. The fact that there's other factors at play that are going to allow Houston to have a good season. But I mean, I don't know. I like the strategy. So I think it could happen if someone else is in a similar situation at a tough new job.
I don't like the strategy if it's like a coach that's established himself already. You know what I mean? Like if this was Dana Holgorsen's first year. So I feel like if you're in your first year, maybe I can understand it. Just, I don't know. Maybe you feel like it benefits the program in the long term. But that's about the only time I could ever say like, okay, you can, I'm cool with it. Cause it's, if you try to make it a habit, or I mean, nobody's going to do it like all the time, but like, it just, you know, you're pretty much wasting a season. You're wasting a lot of the kids, that are on your team. Like there was a lot of, you got a lot of blowback last year from the players. Yeah. Like, hey, this is my senior year. I'm playing. Like you're giving up essentially is what you're doing. You're giving up on my year. And a lot of fans didn't like it. I don't think you can get away with that in any other year if it's not your first one. First year, Neil Brown kind of did a lot of that where he redshirted a lot of guys. Maybe he wouldn't have if he was, I don't know, maybe more established, whatever it is. But yeah, if it's not your first year, I don't like it. And I'm cool on an individual basis for certain particular reasons. Like Michael mentioned a couple guys already, like that could happen and that would be all right. But team wise, we're like, oh, we're struggling a little bit. Let's just, put a pause on it and reread, do it all.
But hear me out on this. What if I agree. I don't think any of the top programs are ever going to do it because they're able to pull in talent on a yearly basis. But say you're like Northwestern and you have some hope going into a season and you kind of start out similar. You're 1-3 or whatever. You're not going to have that ability next year to just turn the light back on. Like maybe you just gear up for the next year. That'll be Northwestern's chance to have a really good season. That's I'm just trying to rationalize like who would potentially do it. I think you might get some G5 schools or like a mid to lower level power team.
Yeah. I mean, I, as a fan of a team, I think I would generally in the right circumstance be in favor of this. Like if, I don't know, I'll use my team USC. Let's say this year we came out and started out 0-4. And so already we're not going to accomplish anything that we wanted to accomplish this season. If they wanted to redshirt a bunch of seniors and give it a go next year, I think I'd be in favor of it because to me as a fan, this year is already kind of a loss.
I will say though that, I would look at these statistics here, but like how many of these, there's so many kids that already redshirt.
Yeah, you can't do it with everyone.
How many redshirts are there really going to be also, especially, I mean, like a team like Northwestern that Trey mentioned, like, how many of those kids are true seniors? Like,
yeah, well, that's a story for another day. But I mean, like Houston had Derek King and Corbin were the big names, and they had it available.
Yeah, and they only redshirted. I think it was five or six senior starters. That's actually quite a bit, and they redshirted, I think, just about every true freshman, if not all of them. So, yeah.
Well, redshirting every freshman, that's always fine. But
yeah,
I don't mind that, but. Redshirting seniors I don't know. That's tough.
Okay. Let's see. What's up next? Number five, we have Miami offensive coordinator Rhett Lashley as an X factor. And he was just hired this offseason from SMU. And this the reason he's an X factor is kind of similar to the situation at Oregon, because the Miami defense, just like Oregon's defense, should be good. I mean, I don't think it's going to be as good as Oregon's defense, but the point is they're kind of set on that side of the ball. The question is the offense. And if the offense takes a step forward, then Miami's obviously a contender in the ACC Coastal and maybe even a dark horse playoff candidate. That would be on the high end of possibilities.
They have a pretty easy schedule.
That's true, yeah. But if the offense struggles like it has been, then Manny Diaz is at risk of getting fired. And we just discussed Derek King. He's the quarterback coming in from Houston. He's going to be their starter. So we've seen that he can be successful, hugely successful in the right system with the right pieces around him. So that's why I had Lashley as the X factor and not Derek King, because I'm more sure in Derek King's talent. It's just, is Lashley going to be able to put the pieces around him and get that continuity with the system in order to have a big year? And I'm cautiously optimistic. What about you guys?
I'm a little less optimistic, I think, about Lashley. It's not like I'm not high on King. Like you said, I think you made the right call putting Lashley as the X factor here, because he's the key. But it's especially this first year, it's hard. It's tough to install a brand new offense, have it humming right out of the gate with the transfer quarterback. But you go back to his days at Auburn when he was the offensive coordinator, you kind of remember Gus Malzahn had to take over the play calling duties just because things were kind of not going so hot. They were getting a little stale and fans were kind of getting a little restless. So Gus just kind of had to go back and take control. So that's not all that encouraging. And maybe he learned something from Sonny Dykes past couple years over at SMU. But he wasn't, it's not like he was running the show there. So again, I have my concerns whether or not Rhett Lashley can, I mean, he's being given the keys here. Like, this is going to be his thing. And he hasn't really had that at any point recently.
No matter what, the offense will look different than it did last year, but they were still the 81st ranked offense by SP Plus. I still have the image of them getting shut out in their bowl game to Louisiana Tech. It's I know it's going to look different, but will the offensive line actually protect this year? Like,
that could personally be an X factor too.
I personally just think that it's a tall order for the 2020 offense to be electric given the new scheme, transfer quarterback, combined with the fact that there was a lack of no spring ball and not a normal offseason here. Like, don't get me wrong, I love King as much as the next guy, but it just seems like it's a lot to ask him to kind of carry the Canes. I mean, they'll be better, but I think the ceiling is being, I think people are kind of overblowing how good it could potentially be. I hope it pans out. And I actually think I'm actually okay with Lashley for the future, but this first year might be a little tougher than expected.
Yeah. I think running more of a spread than Dan Enos was, more pro style, is the right direction to move.
Especially with King, but
yeah.
Yeah. I'm hoping it works.
That Miami talent though. You got to unlock those.
I want to see one more solid season with Derek King. It just makes football so much more fun when
he's pretty awesome that one year, especially.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right, let's move on to our next one here. X Factor number 6, Oklahoma State quarterback Spencer Sanders, the sophomore. To me, he's one of the biggest X Factors in the country. When you look at, if he is really good, I mean, just look what he has around him. You know, he's got some insane talent. Tylan Wallace decided to come back, a wide receiver. Chuba Hubbard decided to come back, a running back, for some odd reason, but good for people in Stillwater. He's still got Dylan Stoner, Braden Johnson at wide receiver. He's got an experienced offensive line. And his defense has literally everybody coming back except for one key piece. So it's just like, it's up to him. Can he take that next step? Because they went 8-4 last year. And they had a winning record in Big 12. So if he takes that next step and becomes a good quarterback, there's no reason why they can't win the Big 12. I mean, they really could. And I think he will. I think he will get better. He doesn't need to be elite. I'm not asking him to go and, be like his crosstown rivals and still in Norman, maybe like Hurts or whatever. But if he's just good, Oklahoma State's going to be a force to reckon with in Big 12. And I trust Gundy, of course, to develop QBs. It's not often that Gundy has to rely on a super young guy, but now he's not. Now Stan Sanders has all the reps and experience and time to develop with Gundy. So yeah, I'm high on him. I'm high on the Cowboys.
Yeah, I am too. He's so gifted. I mean, he was only a freshman last year. He was the Big 12 offensive freshman.
Ryan likes to say redshirt freshman.
He was a redshirt freshman. Which
Yeah, fair enough. But the other thing with Gundy is that the quarterbacks he's had traditionally aren't really athletically gifted. Spencer Sanders ran for over 600 yards. Like, that's usually an element that they don't have. I will agree, he needs to improve upon, keeping care of the ball. He threw like 9 picks, I think, last year.
I think 11.
11 picks. Yeah, even
worse. Need a lot of fumbles. That was my concern about him in our previous pod. But
yeah,
I think that's what I'll get better at.
But when he did keep possession of the ball, his yards per play or yards per attempt was 8.4, which is right in line with like Sam Ellinger and Brock Purdy. Yeah, he didn't have the same volume, but I mean, he was only a freshman redshirt freshman. I think with the supporting cast this year, like, there's no reason he will not improve.
He didn't have Tylan for a good chunk of last year too. So that'll increase that yards per attempt with him.
And they even got that key offensive line transfer from West Virginia, Josh Sills. Like, that's only going to help him up front. I'm in on Spencer Sanders this season.
I feel like it's almost impossible to be out just because of everything you guys brought up with the supporting cast. Like, it doesn't even matter what I think about Spencer Sanders. Obviously, he does have an immense amount of talent, so there's reasons to be bullish on him individually, but it almost doesn't even matter. The offense, I feel like, is going to be great almost no matter who's at quarterback.
Yep.
Cool.
Even Trey.
Yeah, maybe. Well, speaking of quarterback play, we're going to move over to Michigan and their quarterback play being an X factor. You know, that's been part of the reason why Michigan hasn't quite fully broken through under Harbaugh. You know, lately it's been guys like Jake Rudock, Wilton Spate, John O'Korn, and, you know, Shea Patterson recently. And Shea Patterson was like kind of the big guy, and he never quite lived up to the hype coming out of Ole Miss. It's been good quarterback play, but just definitely not great. And so now this year, the quarterback race comes down to junior Dylan McCaffrey or sophomore Joe Milton. McCaffrey's more the mobile guy. Milton has the bigger arm. And if you look at the offense as a whole, they got offensive coordinator Josh Gattis going into his second year. Last year, the offense was fairly pedestrian. They had some moments where it seemed like it would kind of break out. That one game, the second half against Penn State, they broke out. The second half of the year was a little better, but it was still a unit that they finished like seventh in offense in the Big Ten. They need that to really improve, and it kind of, I think, starts with the quarterback. So the problem is for this year, if I had to handicap it, they lose a decent amount of their offensive line. The receivers there, they lost a couple, but you know they've got Nico Collins, Ronnie Bell. They just need to really elevate their game and become pass gobblers, which they really haven't been, and the Michigan receivers haven't kind of stepped up like some of the other schools. So maybe the second year in the Gattis system will help for the team as a whole, but I'm just not fully sold on these Michigan quarterbacks yet.
Yeah, I'm not either. It's just like last year watching them, it was frustrating because you kind of thought they'd break out a little bit, especially with they had good talent at wide receiver. You thought the offensive line was going to be solid, and you know Shea Patterson, senior quarterback. I mean, you thought it would be a better year, but it was disappointing, and there's no way around it. And that's why I'm not high on their QBs this year. I mean, Dylan McCaffrey just doesn't. I guess he's the favorite to win the position, but I just don't see him as the answer there. I've watched him play. I don't feel like he's a true quarterback. He doesn't have a huge arm. Doesn't seem to have the kind of pocket awareness that a normal QB has. It just seems like a good athlete playing quarterback to me. Whereas, you know, Shea Patterson wasn't elite, but at least he seemed a little more comfortable in that regard. And I think Joe Milton will be the guy. Even if he doesn't start right away, I think eventually he'll take over, but he definitely has the bigger upside to me. But even him, he's not going to be consistent this year if he's the guy. So, you know, ultimately I think Milton will be pretty solid, but I'm not banking on Michigan's QB play to be any better. I think it'll be worse than it was last year, actually.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I'm probably a little bit higher than you are, just because I do like the receiving core. It's not great, but Nico Collins, Ronnie, it was big to get Nico Collins back. And they've got good running backs, Hassan Haskins, Zach Charbonnet, having a good season last year. So the skill talent's good. Yes, it hurts losing four offensive linemen to the NFL, but you know, they recruit well. So I don't know. I don't know what to say there. But the big thing is year two of Josh Gattis, because that's a big change going from that boring old Harbaugh offense now to the more modern system that they're running. So second year with these are two four-star quarterbacks who have been at Michigan for a while, and I just think whichever one wins the job will probably be pretty good. Maybe yeah. That's wrong, but that's my guess.
Yeah, because four stars never don't pan out.
It's a four star has never not panned out. I just kind of double negated myself there. I don't know what I said, but let's just move on. Number eight X factor is Clemson's young receivers. And well, I guess they are all going to pan out because they were four stars. So
yeah,
maybe we can just move on to the next question.
Exactly.
No, the reason they're an X factor though is you've got Trevor Lawrence, you got Travis Etienne, but the receiving core is a question mark. And question mark, it's all relative. Obviously,
with Justin Ross going down, of course, is a
Justin Ross going down, losing T. Higgins. Those are two huge losses. And Amari Rodgers at the slot, that's That's a sure thing. He's going to be good. But the question mark is who's going to be that big number one go-to guy? And there's kind of two main, I think, candidates, and a lot of pressure is going to be on them. They're two true sophomores, Joseph Ngata and Frank Ladson. They were both kind of borderline five-star receivers. So the talent is there. But I think to expect them to be as good as Ross and Higgins is probably expecting too much. Maybe you'll get lucky and they will be. But I think if Clemson doesn't win the national championship, it might be because the receiving corps is not at a national championship level.
I would agree with that last statement you made there. Because you look in years past, they've had Williams and then Higgins and Ross. Like guys like that can really make a quarterback look even better. I think the thing, like what you mentioned, Ladson, like he's one of the fastest guys on the team, and their new offensive coordinator he's been there. Tony Elliott's been there, but he's like the guy this year. They were talking about maybe getting Ladson the ball in space, like get more quick passes and get it out to him. So might see it's instead of just throwing it up to the big guy, like they have, maybe they'll use their receivers a little differently this year. I also like, since they do lose, you know, the Higgins and Ross, there are going to be more opportunities for freshmen. And EJ Williams is an incoming freshman that they're pretty high on. He's from Alabama. I think, honestly, he'll be one of the more impactful freshmen, maybe in the nation, but for sure the ACC, just because he's going to be given the opportunity to showcase his stuff.
Yeah, I'm on board with the young guys here. I mean, it's encouraging, at least from a Clemson perspective, that you can point to recent success of young receivers doing well. I mean, we saw
Justin Ross was
true freshman dominating
in a national championship.
So it's like we've seen very recent success from them with young guys. So they can thrive in that system, right out of the gate. And it's not like, you know, Ngata and Ladson they're not freshmen. They're going to be sophomores. So they've had enough experience. They've had enough time to figure out what the system's all about. And, you know, they still have obviously Amari Rodgers. So they're not going to be solely dependent on those guys. But with those three dudes, I mean, that's a heck of a wide receiver group right there. I mean, a lot of teams would, you know, wish that they had that type of talent to work with. I mean, maybe they're a step down a little bit from Justin Ross and T. Higgins, but you know, they're still going to be really good.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. They're not going to be as good. You can't expect them to be. I mean, they're going to be good, but we'll see how great they can be.
Exactly.
But when you go, it's not, you know, when you also have the tight end, they had last year suspended for all last year, Braden Galloway, he was coming back.
Yeah.
And he just adds another dimension that maybe they didn't necessarily quite have. He'll be kind of a matchup nightmare maybe for some folks. So that's four guys right there that I would be very, very happy with as far as if I'm Trevor Lawrence throwing too. So I'm good with it. I think they're going to be good enough, absolutely good enough to be national title good. So yeah, I'm not worried too much if I'm a Clemson fan.
Okay. Fair enough.
All right, let's move on to our ninth one here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we got the partnership of the new Georgia quarterback, Jamie Newman, and their new offensive coordinator, Todd Monken. You know, I've shared my doubts a little bit about Jamie Newman. I'm not I'm low on him, but it just, you know, I'm not think he's going to be bad or anything, but I just want people to temper their expectations, kind of like we're saying with Derek King here. It's like, hey, you know, Georgia loses a lot. It's going to be a new system, new quarterback. It's just, you know, I don't want to put too much pressure on our little brother. That's not fair to
sure.
him.
Sure.
Not fair. When you look at Todd Monken, you know, I'm not exactly high on Monken either. It's
an unknown.
Yeah. He's not known, but last year he was Cleveland Browns OC. They were pretty bad. Actually, they were kind of greatly disappointed last year, bottom third in the league. Then you go the year before that in Tampa, he was pretty disappointing with Jameis, another bad year for them. So the one thing, good thing he has on his resume is one good year at being the head coach at Southern Miss, his last year. But if you look at his total 3 years at Southern Miss, he was 13-25. So that's not very good, but you know, he had one good year. So I'll give him that. And it was his last year, but I don't know. I'm just a little worried. I don't have a ton of confidence in him because we haven't really seen him in that position. And it's just lately he's been out of the college game for about 5 years now. That's a little, so I don't know. I just wouldn't expect a Joe Brady type of impact. I'll say that.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah, I hear you. And you brought up the fact that they don't bring much back. They only have two returning starters. But I honestly don't worry about that quite as much with Georgia because they are literally recruiting number one recruiting classes. So
maybe on the O-line. That's a little...
They lost a lot on the O-line, but again, they recruit so well there. Yeah. And I have some confidence in Matt Luke coaching them. So obviously it'll be a step back, but I don't know. I just see that as a position unit that's just going to reload. And I like Jamie Newman better than you. I think his struggles towards the end of last year we've talked about, I excuse because of injuries on his team. So I'm not going to say I'm super optimistic about the offense because, like you say, new system, new quarterback, shortened off season. It's not the best time to be doing this, but I'm higher than you.
I am as well. I think, there's going to be a lot of new in 2020 with the coordinator, the quarterback, and obviously the turnover, in the team and the personnel, but I'm encouraged. I really like Newman. I love his dual threat ability. And I honestly think right out of the gate, he's better than what Jake Fromm was last year. So they don't need to improve. They were a couple of years removed from, being a play away from the national title. So it's there. And like they lost their running back Swift, but they've got like the five-star, one of the top prospects a couple of years ago, Zamir White. Like he should be good. George Pickens is as good of a receiver out there. He's a sophomore. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are some weapons. And then you add in the fact that Newman can run the ball, and like Fromm, like they might use that dual threat capability to their advantage. Say what you want about Todd Monken, but he'd be a dummy not to at least use that. So I'm curious. I'm optimistic, I guess, more so than Ryan. So I think they'll have a good year.
And the other thing is, they're kind of like Oregon. The offense doesn't need to be great in order for them to be a national championship contender, because the defense is arguably the best in the nation.
Yeah, that is where I'm saying here. Like I'm high on Georgia overall as a team. I think, like you just said, I consider them a national title contender. But just because of the defense, then the offense isn't going to be bad. I'm definitely not trying to say that, but it's not going to be the thing that carries them to the national title.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, then we are on to our last X factor. Unfortunately, here the obvious one is just COVID-19. The effect it could have on the season is becoming more and more real by the day, and obviously putting the fall season in doubt for sure. And as we record this, the Ivy League is reportedly getting ready to announce that they're moving their season to the spring of 2021.
Trendsetters.
They were the trendsetters with
basketball,
college hoops.
Exactly. They were the first. So who knows, could be a domino start falling. But here's an excerpt from an article by Bruce Feldman and Nicole Auerbach in The Athletic. So the quote is, college athletic administrators throughout Division I told The Athletic that they expect a cascading effect following the Ivy League's decision. They didn't say oops in the article. adding that it essentially will give other FCS leagues cover to make similar decisions. Those administrators expect the final decisions regarding a fall football season to then be made at the Group of Five level and by early August at the latest at the Power Five level. End quote.
Yeah, it has to be.
We're going to start learning some stuff soon.
Yeah, I mean, it's not fun to be a downer, but fall seems far fetched. It really does. Just the way it's going. I hope we can do a spring, and I hope it can be a somewhat normal season. I think that's could be exciting to watch and go for. But yeah, fall seems like it's not good news.
I think you're the most pessimistic about.
I've been the most just because I realize, yeah. Like, what are you going to do if you don't have a vaccine? Like, nothing's going to change. Like,
but even next spring, I mean, now we're getting into talk that I don't want to be getting into because,
yeah,
what do we know about when there's going to be a vaccine and when it's going to be widely available? Yeah. But
I just know that. Well, I didn't know. I just felt like if there wasn't one, which I knew there kind of wasn't going to be one for the fall. We kind of knew that.
No.
So that was, I was like, how is there going to be football if there's no vaccine? Like, it's just, you know, and then of course,
I don't know if there needs to be a vaccine for football, then I wouldn't necessarily say that's the case.
Or at least just a massive drop off in cases is
right. That's why the last couple of weeks have been so damaging for.
Right. Fair enough. Yeah. It's just,
Yeah. What are your thoughts, Trey? Make some bold predictions, Trey.
No, I'm obviously everything's so fluid and it changes by the day. So I'd be a fool to make any prediction on this. But what I will say is it's going to be fascinating to see how it plays out, because it is, there's not a governing body like that does one. Like the NFL, it's all in one. The NBA is all in one. NHL, all in one. Yeah. Whereas like it's going to be really, I'm curious to see, okay, so the Ivy League might go one direction and then maybe some group of fives do. But like, maybe the SEC says, screw it, like we're just going to play a conference schedule. Like there's so many elements that could come to fruition here that I'm curious to see how it plays out, whether they all agree to push it to the spring and see what happens, or if some conferences just branch out and do their own thing. That's what I'm curious to see.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like it's kind of a conference by conference decision, but I would hope that all the conferences come together to make the same decision, because just as a fan, that we want everyone to be playing at the same time.
Right.
So the Pac-12 has modeled four scenarios. One, play the regular season as scheduled. Two, delay the start of the season. Three, play a conference-only schedule. Or four, of course, move the football season to the spring of 2021. And with each passing day, that number four is becoming more and more likely. I'm not willing to just say that that's what's going to happen, but there's definitely seems to be a growing thinking that might happen.
That seems like the only way that we would get for everybody to be to actually play everyone at the same time. The only way I see that happening is if they did push it to spring at this point.
All right. We'll see. That's why we delayed our preview episodes, because if we were starting to preview a Michigan Washington non-conference game that reportedly is now unlikely to happen, then might become a very moot episode very quickly. So we will see.
Tough times.
All right. Yeah. Well, that'll do it for this week's episode of the College Football Bros. Let us know on social media if there's any other X factors we missed. There's definitely, we had quite a few that we had to leave off the list because, you know, I said, Ryan and Trey, there can only be 10. That's all I'm willing to do.
Yeah, you took out my Iowa State offensive line pick.
It was a good pick. Vetoed. You want to talk about the Iowa State offensive line? Why it's the X factor?
Nah, I didn't. We're good. But hey, man, they got everything else coming back. They're going to be good. Brock Purdy. I mean, that defense has got like 9 guys coming back. I think they only lose like Ray Lima and some other linebacker. Forget his name. But their defense is going to be really good. They got some great pieces coming back. A wide receiver, Breece Hall, running back, is a stud. So it's really like, if that offensive line, and Campbell feels like they hit, like meaning like they were successful in their last 3 offensive line recruiting classes. So, you know, it feels like this is going to be the year where it finally starts to get stabilized. Watch out.
I would love a coach to be like, yeah, no, we whiffed all of our line guys. Yeah, we sucked.
Well,
I hear you.
He went out of his way to say that he.
Yeah, no, I'm high on the Cyclones too. I like it.
Yeah.
And Iowa State was better than their record last year. The metrics really liked Iowa State.
They were what, top 25 in the
in a couple like close losses, and they'll bounce back.
Yep.
I mean, yeah. Okay, well, now that'll do it. Ryan got in his Iowa State offensive line talk.
Well, you love Iowa State, so you love Chad Campbell.
I do too. No,
did
I'm
say Chad Campbell?
Yeah, you did.
The golfer.
Oh, whoa.
Wow.
Matt Campbell.
Excuse me, Matt.
Anyway, I guess there were 11 X factors in this episode. So again, thanks for listening. Again, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter at CFB Bros, and we will talk to you next week.
You've been listening to the College Football Bros. If you have any questions for the next podcast, email them to collegefootballbros@gmail.com. To keep up with the brothers on social media, like them on Facebook at College Football Bros, follow them on Instagram at College Football Bros, and for their commentary on Saturdays, follow them on Twitter at CFB Bros. Thanks for listening.